Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
Hello and welcome to The Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, a southeastern suburb of London. I'd like to invite you along to attend one of our services. We meet each Sunday at 10:30 a.m. I also am the pastor of the Lutheran Mission in Raynham, Kent. We meet the first Sunday of each month at 3 o'clock, and I serve as vacancy pastor for St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride. We meet each Sunday at 11 a.m. So again, if you live in those areas, please come and pay us a visit. Otherwise, check our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the nearest congregation to where you are, and I know you'll receive a warm welcome. Again, we thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio. Without your prayers and your gifts, we wouldn't be able to continue our ministry of reaching out with the word of our Lord to people around the world. So we are very deeply appreciative of you for your support. Last week, we began a conversation with Dr. Robert Kolb. He is Professor Emeritus of Systematic Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He is the author of many, many books on Luther and the Reformation. And last week, we were speaking about the 500th anniversary of the burning of the papal bull by Dr. Luther in Wittenberg. And we invited Dr. Kolb back, as we didn't get too terribly far into that, but it's lovely to have you back with us, Bob.
Thank you. It's great to be here, John.
We did cover a lot of ground, but some interesting stuff. Can we perhaps bring back a little bit of review for those who may have missed last week? What do you, or what do we mean by talking about a papal bull, and why was a bull issued against Luther in the first place?
Bull is simply from the Latin word bulla, an official document, a document that would execute a decision by, in this case, the papal court or the pope himself. Certainly in the name of the pope. I think it was necessary because after the 95 theses on the practice of indulgences that Luther's had proposed for just a friendly debate at the University of Wittenberg, but it had gone viral, as we would say today. Four printers got a hold of it, and it spread, and it didn't spread so widely. Who wants to read Latin academic prose? But it did. The fact that it sold at all convinced Luther that he should use the printing press to get his ideas on indulgences to a wider German-speaking reading public. And so he published a little treatise called On Indulgence and Grace in early 1518, and that really carried his message. But it wasn't the issue of indulgence so much as the issue of papal authority. Luther had not directly challenged papal authority, but certainly strongly implied or raised questions about the authority of the pope. And that, of course, threatened one of the pillars of society. If the society didn't know what was right and wrong in terms of eternal matters, then how could it trust the imperial decrees for temporal matters? And so both in church and in society, there was a feeling that Luther was trying to undermine the very foundations of society. And that, of course, is always a threat in any time and in any place.
And then we spoke about all of the other things that underpinned the process, from the posting of the 95 theses through all kinds of other events, including the universities. And then we get to the 15th of June, 1520, where the bull is actually composed, written, as I understand it, by our friend Eck, who we talked about last week and had some words about Luther. He's a notoriously suspect. He's heretical and several other things. Again, he's the wild boar in the vineyard. Is that right?
Yes, that picks up on a biblical image, which biblical images were often used not only in church documents, but in general in conversation in the 16th century. So the threat of having a wild boar, they were all over the German-speaking lands. A wild boar in your garden or in your vineyard, that was a real threat. You could lose the whole crop if the wild pig got in and feasted for an evening or just tore things up. And so the image was very significant, I think, because it showed the feeling of threat that both ecclesiastical and secular authorities felt. They took very seriously the implications of what Luther was saying about where to turn for the truth. And we talked a little bit about the Leipzig debate of early 1519, and Luther was increasingly calling for dependence on scripture alone and to let lay people loose in the scriptures was simply against everything that the medieval church taught about papal authority and about the authority of the bishops and the priests. And so there was a real threat that this wild pig was going to tear up society and church.
And so was the heart of the threat that the laity should be let loose in the scriptures, or what were the things that got the Pope and his minions nervous, and perhaps even the Emperor and his minions nervous?
I think it was only implicitly was it, at this point at least, the issue of the lay reading of scriptures. At this point, it was simply the challenge, can we trust the word of the Pope as infallible? The infallibility decree, of course, lies way in the future at this point, but there was a general understanding that when the Pope spoke, the truth had been spoken. When Pope interpreted a Bible passage, that was what the Bible passage meant, no matter what. And so it was that dependence on a single voice to determine what you could believe, what you should trust for life, that seemed under threat with Luther. And that's powerful stuff, that sets the neighborhood aflame. So this was a very serious matter. And, from the standpoint of those who were dependent on what the Pope said, you can understand why they reacted so viciously and violently, in their speech to what Luther was proposing.
So the bull is written, it's published. How did it get to Luther? How did it get to the German lands and churches throughout Europe?
John Eck was really very prominent in that whole process. I think by his own design, as I mentioned last week, he was kind of under the gun himself because of his, particularly his position on charging interest. It was said that he was in the pay of the house, the banking house of Fugger. The Fugger family was probably the most prominent banking family north of the Alps, if not in entire Europe at this point. And the Fuggers did help Eck out financially. And so he was accused of sort of selling himself as a theologian for hire. And so he was trying to right his reputation and show that he was a loyal son of the church. And so he took upon himself to promote the excommunication. And once it had been issued, he brought that papal bull, actually both the bull that was burned, the one that announced that Luther would be excommunicated if he didn't recant, and then he managed the campaign that spread the final bull too in the course of 1521. But at this point, Eck had personally brought copies of the bull and delivered them to various city halls, to various princely courts, and to universities. Although he didn't dare personally to go to all these places. In some cases, he dispatched it by messenger.
So how did Luther receive the copy, or Frederick, his prince? How did they receive word of this excommunication, this bull?
Eck did not visit Wittenberg to chat with Luther about it. It just came by mail, we might say. Eck was not going to dare to do that. So copies were printed, and the students, Luther apparently did not initiate the burning of the bull, but the students gathered on that December day at the Elster Gate, not too far from the university and the Black Cloister, where Luther lived as an Augustinian brother. And there they burned not only the bull, but some of their theology texts. The story is told that they asked for some of the really important theology texts from some of the professors, and the professors said, no, we don't want to surrender those books. Books were not cheap in those days. So that's kind of the way it unfolded. If Luther knew about the plans to burn it, he didn't say anything, but that's a bit shrouded in mystery.
How long was it, do we know, from the time Luther received the bull until he actually burned it? And as I understand it, or at least a number of authors I've read have said, you know, that was not a big deal to Luther. The big deal was actually burning a lot of these, you know, canon law or these other dogmatics books. That was, in his mind, a much bigger deal than burning the bull.
I think that's right. His struggle, he was a university professor. His personal struggle was with what had been taught, the way he had been instructed. And so the burning of those books was vital to what he understood was the fuel on which the church really ran, that is, its theology. And so I can't imagine that he was indifferent to having the Pope say, burn this man at the stake, whoever can, or kill him by other means, whoever can. That sort of death threat, I think everyone would take seriously. But what Luther was really concerned about was what was being taught at the universities and thus was trickling down into the parishes.
I want to read a quote to you from James Atkinson. He wrote a biography of Luther in the Penguins series, and he writes about this. If the Reformation can be dated, that date must be the 10th of December, 1520. If eras can be dated, our modern era began at 9 o'clock that morning. He's talking about the burning of the papal bull. What do you think about that? Is that overstatement, or is there some truth in that, Bob?
Well, you can pick out a number of those dates. 1517, the 31st of October, is the date we usually give. Timothy Wengert, an American Reformation scholar, recently wrote a study of Luther's work on the freedom of a Christian and said that its publication is really the beginning of the Reformation, because with that particular treatise, Luther lays out his doctrine of justification and presents his theological agenda to the church. So I think Atkinson has certainly making a good point that this was an important point. It's sometimes said that Luther excommunicated the Pope before the Pope excommunicated Luther, but whether we can say the Reformation began on a specific date, I don't know if we can really defend that.
Now, I'm guessing that the Pope did not receive the news that Luther had burned the bull and that other students and professors had joined him in such activities with a great deal of excitement. How was that news greeted in Rome, and what was the response?
I don't know if there was specific response to the burning of the bull as such, but there was, I think, the general expectation. Eck had undoubtedly given this impression that Luther was not going to back down. So I think the first bull that was burned probably was done as a formality, and then they said, let's get on to the business at hand that we knew we were going to do anyway, because he wasn't going to recant. And so they went through with the excommunication. But because Germany was divided, imperial power was relatively weak, and the power of the area princes like Frederick the Wise was so strong, neither excommunication or the declaration of outlawry at the Diet of Worms in 1521 made much of a difference to Luther's daily life.
Now, when you mention recant, and that's what they wanted Luther to do, what do you mean by using the term recant?
A formal statement: I was wrong, do not believe what I said, and I regret very much the damage I've done. Any number of protesters have recanted in the history of the church. When we're not under the gun for our opinions, we do it in a much quieter and more subtle way, saying, oh, I made a mistake there. But when things had gotten as serious as they had with Luther, Luther would have had to publicly announce and probably publish, since we're now in the era of publishing, a formal statement of where he had erred and why, specifically, what things should be taught contrary to what he had advanced.
What were the repercussions amongst his followers in Wittenberg and in, you know, all the areas that followed him? How was the burning of the bull met? How was it presented? And did it have any sort of major ripples that went out from that?
It certainly was something that people talked about in the taverns in the evening. But I think actually what was going on in terms of the wider public was going on because of things that Luther had published rather than reports about what he was doing. It is true that the papal legate Aleander at the Diet of Worms a few months later said 9 out of 10 Germans are saying long live Luther, and the other 10 are saying death to the Pope. And from my perspective, probably they didn't really know the difference between the two. There was this antagonism toward Italian draining of funds from Germany at this point that was widespread in the population. But I think what really was making a difference, and it was making a profound difference in the public thinking, both about the Christian faith and about Luther personally, were a series of four treatises that he published in 1520. The first, On Good Works, was kind of a positive presentation of what Luther thought Christian daily life should look like, and it was based on the fulfillment of the first commandment, fearing, loving, and trusting in God above all things. Then he went on in what is called the Open Letter to the German Nobility, and in that he deconstructed about 30 practices of the church. He followed that up. That was published in August. In October, he published a prelude on the Babylonian captivity of the church, which was also a work of deconstruction, but this time on the whole system of dependence on performance of ritual and a dependence on the priest, the local priest, and the whole hierarchy up to the Pope. And then in November, he published On Christian Freedom in Latin, The Freedom of a Christian in German, which was, again, a positive presentation of what he thought the Christian faith and daily life were all about. And so I think those four treatises, as well as other things he'd published, were what was making a big difference in the public spirit and the public attitude toward Luther at this time.
Now, do we know how his actions were met by his own prince, Frederick? Is there any record of what Frederick thought about these actions?
Frederick kept his cards very close to his chest. We are pretty sure that Luther and Frederick never met. If They did, by chance, meet at some point and exchange words. Neither one of them ever said a word about that. And it's unlikely that Luther could have gone to his death 20 years after Frederick's without mentioning something like that. So we suspect that Frederick saw Luther at the Diet of Worms. He was sitting in the assembly while Luther stood before it to reject the emperor's plea that he recant. But Frederick said very, very little. We simply know that through his trusted primary advisor, Georg Spalatin, who was a good friend of Luther's, he supported Luther, protected him. And it's said that he received the Lord's Supper in both kinds, which would have been a sign that he accepted at least part of Luther's program for reform. But we know absolutely nothing from his own hand or from his own mouth about his attitude toward what Luther taught.
Do we know anything about how his Augustinian brothers felt about what Luther did? Or were they divided, or was there some unanimity there?
They were, not all of them left the cloister. But of those in Wittenberg, Luther was the last to lay aside his monastic habit and the like. In general, Luther's support came from a number of places, but in terms of the orders of the church, there were a number of Franciscans, even more Augustinians, very few Dominicans, some Benedictines who left the monastery, the cloister, to become his followers. And there were a number of nuns, of sisters, who fled the monastery, the cloister, because they supported Luther. Although there was at least one very prominent sister in Nuremberg, Caritas Pirckheimer, who actually wrote against Luther. So it was divided, but among the Augustinians, the vast majority, well, at least a majority, seem to have abandoned the cloister, and many of them became then pastors in congregations following Luther's teaching.
So, Bob, what difference did this excommunication make in Luther's daily life, and perhaps maybe even how he went about his duties as pastor and professor in Wittenberg, and even the effect it had on the church there?
There are really two answers that you can give for at least the personal question. The one is very little. Luther continued to teach, he continued to preach, he continued to publish, and so he, in many ways, didn't notice, is not the right way to say it, but it did not affect the way he conducted his daily life. It probably helped free him up to marry, and that was certainly a profound change in his life. So on the one hand, I think we can say life went on for Luther because he had the protection of Frederick the Wise, then Frederick's successor, his brother John, and John's son, John Frederick. All were the latter two, John and John Frederick, were personal friends of Luther, conversed with him and counted on him for advice. However, the other answer is just as COVID-19 is keeping me from being in the archives and libraries in Germany, where I'd like to be this time of year. So it definitely restricted his travel. He could travel within the bounds of electoral Saxony. He didn't dare stray into the lands of Frederick's cousin George, although when George died in 1539, he did go into those lands to help reform them, because George's brother Heinrich converted to the Lutheran cause. But Luther could travel to the borderland with Hessen, because Philip of Hesse, the prince there, was again one of his most ardent supporters. Whether Luther really suffered from not being able to travel, we don't really have any indication. Travel was not so important in those days as it is for many of us today. So to a large extent, I would say, he probably woke up every morning knowing that if somebody wanted to kill him, they had both authority from the Pope and from the Emperor to do so. The justice could be carried out once you had the imperial or the papal permission without going through a court of law. So he knew he was under the threat of death for the last 25 years of his life. But in fact, it probably made very little difference simply because of the political factor that he had protection.
Dr. Robert Cold, we thank you for helping us walk through and review this 500th anniversary of Luther's burning of the papal bull on the 10th of December, 1520 in Wittenberg. We deeply appreciate your insights and your wonderful ability to put all things into context. And speaking of travel, we too are sorry that you're not able to be with us in Europe. We miss seeing you and your lovely wife and sharing some time together and fellowship together. And I do hope that it won't be long and we'll be able to see you back here again. But thank you once more for your time, for your insights. And we pray God's richest blessings upon you and your work. And again, stay safe. And we do pray God's richest peace for you.
Thank you, John. It's been so good to be with you.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.